This is Logan Sekula. Republicans call for Buttigieg to resign after bridge disaster in Maryland.
Keeping you informed and engaged, now more than ever. This is Sekulo. We want to hear from you. Share and post your comments or call 1-800-684-3110. And now your host, Logan Sekulo.
That's right, this is Logan Sekulo in the studio with executive producer Will Haynes. Let's make sure we open up those phone lines and start calls 1-800-684-3110. There we go, 1-800-684-3110, because I want to hear from you. Because there's been a massive call. And look, this isn't a brand new call. Marco Rubio was doing this just a couple weeks ago. After that tragedy, that horrible bridge collapse, that we've all seen the footage, that looks like, you know, it almost just gets poked and just collapses in a half a second. This entire landmark bridge comes down, collapses, obviously multiple casualties, horrible tragedy. But it does make you wonder, what's going on in our Department of Transportation? What's going on with Pete Buttigieg? And what's going on with the Biden administration in terms of where they're spending your money? And if it's supposed to be on infrastructure, Will, if we're supposed to have these big infrastructure bills that we know we're actually, you know, they would say it's infrastructure bill, but really it's an environmental bill.
Right.
This is the kind of thing that's happening. And it's not just this. We obviously have seen the problems in the airline industry. Matt Walsh from the Daily Wire, he posted train derailments, supply chain crisis, planes falling from the sky, ships crashing into bridges. I don't know what the cause of this latest catastrophe is, but the overall picture is quite bleak. And I think that's how we should all feel about this, which is not saying there's anything nefarious that happened in that tragedy, but that maybe that the cause and the root of that is that we are spending our money on the wrong places.
Well, and this is the reality of an election year. You start to analyze the decisions and the accomplishments or failures of an administration when they're on the ticket to run for re-election. And here's what we've got here. One of the marquee pieces of legislation that the Biden administration points to as one of their biggest victories in his tenure as president are the Build Back Better Act and the Infrastructure Investment and Jobs Act. So they were two pieces of legislation that went in tandem. But when you add the total of the spending from those two pieces of legislation, it's $2.2 trillion. $2.2 trillion that are supposed to be going to building back better the infrastructure of the United States, as well as the Infrastructure Investment Act.
Yeah.
And what have we seen out of this? We've seen the litany of disasters, whether it's East Palestine, Ohio,
derailment. People aren't commenting that. A lot of comments right now on the YouTube channel going, don't forget about East Palestine. Of course, the East Palestine situation.
And now you see the bridges, the airlines. You can't forget when Southwest and one other airline had that massive outage and the FAA had to ground the entire fleet of aircraft from companies. We're not seeing a building back better. And it leads the question, what is Pete Buttigieg doing and where is $2.2 trillion going except for Green New Deal light policies?
Yeah, and his response was, you know, this is a cathedral to, what was it?
Yeah, we'll play that in the next segment.
This was a cathedral to American
infrastructure.
Well, guess who's responsible for that American infrastructure that failed? Sorry, even if it was the fact you can't control that a tanker lost power, let's just say all that's accurate. A tanker loses power, plows itself into there. That probably should not be enough to take down this cathedral to whatever, American exceptionalism. Phone lines are open. I want to hear from you. 1-800-684-3110. 1-800-684-3110. This also comes off of RFK Jr. announcing his vice presidential candidate. And whether you like him or not, I'm sure there's a lot of people and hopefully a lot of Democrats looking at what's going on right now in their own party, looking at bridge collapses, look at it happened to East Palestine and going, you know what? Maybe that environmentalist guy is not so bad. So that should be pretty interesting to see if this will impact his ticket and how that can impact then the potential re-election of Joe Biden or the re-election of President Donald Trump. I'd love to hear from you, your thoughts on that too. Not necessarily about whether you like his running mate or not, but do you think that this is a wake-up call to a lot of people who may not get on that Trump train, but certainly are looking for other places to go? 1-800-684-3110. And maybe you are one of those people, by the way. You're listening right now. I'd love to hear from you. Support the work of the ACLJ right now. We are in critical legal battles. We are dealing with amazing media scrutiny for those who are on the right. You can be a part of that as well. Go to aclj.org. Make your donation. Last few days in our Life and Liberty Drive. Seculo, welcome. We're going to take some of these calls coming up here in just a second. Look, I always think it's fair to hear from the person that you're talking about. We'll hear from Pete Buttigieg and hear his clips here as we were talking about not just the disaster that was that bridge collapse, but all of the other items in the transportation and infrastructure system that have failed over the last, I don't know, conveniently, handful of years. So we'll talk about those coming up. I am going to ask, if you're on YouTube right now, you know what? I'll be honest. YouTube's been pretty good. We've had some really good success over there recently. But this is not necessarily the news a lot of times that can break into people's feeds without your support. So right now I'm going to ask you, if you're on YouTube and you haven't subscribed, to please subscribe. I ask you to hit that thumbs up. Go back to me, actually. Go back to me. I want to direct. Hit that thumbs up. You'll see that. And put in a comment. Tell us what you're thinking, how you're feeling right now. And that helps get that into more people's feeds, more people's, you know, into their algorithm. Because this kind of news, I know it is very specific. It is very nuanced. But it is what impacts everyone on a day-to-day basis. Our basic infrastructure. And if we're talking about government spending, this is the really one of the few places I believe all of us can get behind. Yeah, our bridges should be safe. Yeah, our trains should be safe. Our airplanes certainly should be safe. Good Lord, I'm not a great flyer to begin with, okay? So when you have this news happening, not the most fun for those of us that are nervous flyers. And that's where we're at.
Well, as well, another action item you can take is there is a poll up there right now on YouTube that says, should Pete Buttigieg resign, yes or no, or just see the results. But engaging in that also helps get this this show out into more people's feeds. So that's another thing you can do if you're looking to engage.
Interact.
But we should play this bite because this...
Be fair.
This is from Mayor Pete, as he was lovingly called when he was running for president, but now Secretary of Transportation, Pete Buttigieg. This is when he was addressing the disaster that happened with this bridge in Maryland. Let's play Bite 24.
How concerned should Americans be about the bridges that they're traversing every single day in this country?
This is a unique circumstance. I do not know of a bridge that has been constructed to withstand a direct impact from a vessel of this size. What I will say is anytime anything happens to any bridge, we as a country take that and learn from that. This is no ordinary bridge. This is one of the cathedrals of American infrastructure. It has been part of the skyline of this region for longer than many of us have been alive. So the path to normalcy will not be easy, it will not be quick, it will not be inexpensive, but we will rebuild together.
So you're paying for it, it's your fault, it is what it is. And of course, the over-emotion of this, at the end of the day, sure, is it a big deal? People are probably sad. There are people who are from Baltimore and they're dealing with the sadness of losing part of their skyline and their history. Sure. Are we having issues here where he says, you know what, this has been part of the skyline for longer than most of us have been alive? Maybe that's a problem.
Right.
Maybe that's something we need to be addressing here as you go across, I don't know, the Golden Gate Bridge thousands of times a day. You go to the Brooklyn Bridge. These have all been there for a very long time.
Right.
Not just before we were born, before our parents were born, most likely. Those bridges and those things were there. You don't see that happening. Look, tragedies happen. I don't want to say that this is an intentional thing or that they knew somehow that if a tanker tapped this bridge, it would fall down, but it should be a wake-up call.
Here's my concern with several of the things that he said in this statement. One, this is a unique circumstance. I do take a little bit of issue with that because as if you saw the break video, if you're watching on YouTube and or if you've heard the litany of things we went through earlier, whether it be train derailments or bridges collapsing. We have seen bridges collapse. There was one out of Philadelphia where a part of the interstate system, much newer than many of these bridges, collapsed just due to a fire. And then we saw, obviously, it's been more than 15 years now, the Minnesota, we saw a bridge collapse there. Why weren't there wake-up calls? That was under the Obama administration. Why weren't there wake-up calls then to say, we need to be analyzing every bridge in this country and see if, maybe these things aren't withstanding that. Also, to his statement that he doesn't know of a bridge that could withstand an impact like this of a tanker of this size. Well, we have tankers of this size. They pass through these bridges every single day. If you've passed a $2 trillion infrastructure bill, maybe start there. Maybe start there and think, if we've got ships this big that go under every day, if something happens, Can we minimize the damage instead of not just a section of the bridge falling down? It looked like dominoes collapsing.
In a half a second, it comes down. I mean, it's unbelievable. And you're right. I don't think the American people really, and I've had to be woken up to this, some of our friends that are in this industry, how much is still being shipped and moved via rivers, via lakes, be it not lakes, via rivers, via channels.
Well, Great Lakes.
Great Lakes, yeah.
Great Lakes, yes.
But rivers and our country and how this is all connected, obviously, ocean liners and that kind of thing as well. This is still a big mode of transportation for a lot of things and of delivery. You're not thinking about it because you shouldn't have to think about it, truthfully.
And people,
the money should be going to make sure we're safe on this. And the last thing American people should be concerned of is this bridge I'm crossing safe. We're dealing with enough here. And the deal we have sort of with the federal government here should be, we pay you X amount of dollars. Those dollars feel ridiculous, but they mainly feel ridiculous when things like this happen. When you go, this is the basic need. The stuff that isn't the basic need, if you're building, you know, termite training facilities in lower Alabama, that's maybe the stuff where we go, okay, that's a problem. That's not really where we should be focused on. Maybe, I don't know, your cathedral to the Midwest or whatever he called
it. Cathedral of American infrastructure.
No one's checking that cathedral, okay? Like, this is, you know, this is like, yeah, it's fine. It's a cathedral. It's been there forever. We talk about,
like, Notre Dame, you know, like nothing happened there. Right, yeah. Cathedrals, they're generally okay.
Yeah, we think about, Will and I were just talking about, like, even things like the Chesapeake Bay Bridge Tunnel. You're talking about modern marvels that are now at this point very old.
Yeah.
And by the way, a disaster happens on that. I can't even imagine. You're under the ocean.
Thousands of casualties.
Yes. And you shouldn't have to think about that.
Right.
Obviously, a lot of times when you are doing that, you are thinking about it. Like, wow,
that's the only thing you're thinking
this
of.
This is wild.
If
I'm
you know
underwater.
The Chesapeake Bay Bridge Tunnel, it goes across the bay.
Miles of underwater.
From Virginia Beach area to the eastern shore of Virginia.
Headed towards
and
D.C.
And it cuts across the mouth of the Chesapeake Bay. And it is part bridge, part tunnel, off and on for, I think, 25, 30
a
miles.
A long time.
And you are sometimes on a bridge, then you go under the water, and that's how ships can pass over the sections that are tunnel sections to go through, so they didn't have to build too tall of a bridge. The thing moves with the wind because of how it's engineered. It's one of the more terrifying things you can go on. But I hope that our $2.2 trillion are looking at the structural integrity of that bridge today.
It's wild to go on it. But you've also never really questioned it.
Right.
I've never been like, before I do this, is there any other way around? No. Because you actually have some trust in your transportation department that you're going to be safe, even if it feels kind of ridiculous. I feel horrible for the victims of this. I don't want to take anything away from this. Multiple people, there are multiple casualties. It could have been a lot worse, if we're being honest. You don't want to take anything away from the people that were lost and their families. But also, if it had happened just a handful of hours later, and not in the middle of the night, essentially, you could have had an extreme, extreme mass casualty event. And I'm very thankful that did not happen. But it should be a wake-up call to a lot of people. We're going to be taking your phone calls coming up. And we're also going to talk about what we can do at the ACLJ to, you know, put some pressure on them as well for that. And we're going to be going to Jeff Balaban in the next segment, who's going to be joining us from Israel live to discuss the current state of the war against Gaza and how the U.S. has kind of flip-flopped on Israel. We're going to discuss that and a lot more coming up. We are in those last few days. We have a holiday coming up. I think you all know that. We have Easter coming up, Good Friday on Friday. So usually we do a big lead up to our final day of the month. Now this is a little different. So we're saying, you know, we really only have a couple days here for this Life and Liberty Drive. And I think they did the math and they're like, when's the next time that one of these would happen? It's not for like another 28 years. So I think we're fine. But for now, this is where we're at. So instead of asking you at the end of the month and to disrupt your Easter plans and all of that, and to try to do this last day, big fundraiser we usually do, we're going to ask you a little bit more frequently throughout this week. So right now, I'm going to encourage you. This is it. Our Life and Liberty Drive deadline is just in 3 days, and you can still have your gift doubled at ACLJ.org. This couldn't come at a more critical time. We're right now at the UN Human Rights Council in Geneva today. CC Hiles there. You're going to see it later on in this broadcast. Right. We have the footage delivering an oral intervention for a Christian, Shahzad, who is on death row because of his faith. We have Pastor John Saul, who was just released from prison, wrongful imprisonment in China after we fought for him for years. But We are doing our fight now to get him still back home to his family. He's not in prison anymore, but still getting him home is a whole nother mess that we have incredible minds at. We're continuing our fight against the Biden administration's abandonment of Israel. We're going to talk about that in the next segment with Jeff Balaban because of the pro-Hamas UNRWA funding that we're still being a part of. We're demanding that that be changed. And, I got to take a deep breath there. We're also filing an amicus brief in just days to defend the integrity of the judicial system in the Fani Willis case. You've heard us talk about that over and over. Right now, have your tax-deductible gift doubled at ACLJ.org. We couldn't do any of these fights without your support, and we do them at no cost to our clients. And no paywalls for you to watch this show, to listen to this show, and create all the incredible content. And I want to have the best and brightest people on this. We can't do that without your support. Go to ACLJ.org to have your tax-deductible gifts doubled right now. We also are very close to our ACLJ champion stretch goal. We're going to talk about that in the next segment. Welcome back to Secula. We'll be taking your calls, by the way, and so stay on hold if you are on hold right now. We'll get to you a bit later in the show, or you can call in at 1-800-684-3110. We are joined by Jeff Balaban, live from Israel. Will, and there has been some updates. We wanted to get some reaction from Jeff.
That's right. And Jeff, you and I had been talking yesterday as you were back en route to Israel about the situation that unfolded at the UN Security Council. And this is where the United States took a new move there, and they kind of called back to the Obama playbook of allowing something to pass that damages Israel by just saying, we're here, but we're not going to vote. What's your readout on the abstention vote from the United States yesterday that allowed a ceasefire resolution to pass the UN Security Council?
Well, you know what they say, silence is deemed consent. And the fact that the United States abstained as the UN handed this unbelievable victory to Hamas, to its Iranian backers, to those who wished death and destruction on Israel, on the Jews, on America, just tells you exactly what an evil turn this has taken. And I could tell you, from the moment I arrived here in Israel, that's been the conversation, ranging from shock and dismay to fury and anger at this betrayal by the Biden administration of the Jewish people and the state of Israel.
And I want to get your take on this, because this is I'm going to read you what Admiral Kirby said as they try to spin that they were not supporting this measure because they abstained. And then I kind of want to push back on this, because that's what we do at the ACLJ. We point out the hypocrisy or the anti-Semitism or any other manner of anti-Israel action that goes on with this government. But Admiral Kirby said, because the final text does not have key language we view as essential, notably a condemnation of Hamas, we could not support it. So he's going out on television at a press conference saying we could not support it. But as you said, silence is consent in this manner. What's your response to Admiral Kirby?
We know that there have been other administrations, and not just Republican administrations. There were some spectacular administrations at the UN who had our ambassadors to the UN who represented America as a light to the nation, as a light to the world, as opposed to just adding to the darkness, which is what's happened here, to turning our lights out. No, the truth is that this was a statement of pure evil. This is a statement that evil wins, that it's okay to launch a massive, not just terror attack, but it's a war on an innocent nation against innocent men, women, and children, and that the world will back you because the U.S. is in the hands of a feckless administration that, as we all know, because what I find fascinating is that the media reports this widely and nobody even seems to understand, no one contradicts it, understands the morality that's implied here, which is that everyone talks about the, quote, two-state solution, Michigan and Minnesota, because obviously the Democrats want to keep those two states, which are important swing states, which have heavy anti-Israel, anti-Semitic Muslim communities and voters. Not to say that all Muslim communities and voters are anti-Semitic, but the ones in Michigan and Minnesota certainly are. And it's clear that for this domestic concern, they're throwing Israel under the bus. Let me tell you, America should not be following. America should be leading. They should be down there remonstrating against the evil of this idea of calling for a ceasefire, which is to say Hamas wins, terror wins. But you know, it's completely consistent with what this administration has done since the beginning, which used this horrible attack on Jewish civilians, on Israeli innocents, to call for the creation of a Palestinian state. And now they're strengthening Hamas, which has always been the dominant force in Palestinian control and power. They're strengthening Hamas as the leadership, ensuring that if Hamas survives, which they're trying to keep, which America seems to be trying to keep happening, then they will be in control. This is nothing but other than an absolute disaster.
Jeff, I just was curious, from a humanitarian point of view even, I think we're seeing so much, and on the media when they're covering Israel, we're seeing Gaza, we're seeing destruction, we're seeing all the kind of chaos that surrounds it. What is the life during wartime in Israel? I just want to know, what's the feeling, the emotion on the streets at this point? We are months into this. It's not like, you know, the days where every business is shut down and they're trying to figure out what to do. We're now 6 months into this, plus at this point. What does it feel like to be there? I've only been there during, you know, obviously there's always times of struggle in Israel. There's always times of you got to always be safe and be aware, but you can not put your guard down, but it doesn't feel like an unsafe place to be just walking around. Obviously, we know the anti-Israel sentiment that's happening even in our college campuses here. In Vanderbilt here, we had an issue yesterday. Mm-hmm. But what about there on the ground? Because we're not seeing regular Israeli life by any means being portrayed in the media.
It's a great question, Logan. And it's very difficult to answer unless someone's actually here, because on the one hand, everything has changed. Nothing is normal. There's not a family here that hasn't lost somebody close to them. There's not a family here or who hasn't had someone serve for months in horrific danger, and therefore is agonizing every moment of the day about their father, their mother, their brother, their sister, their child, their parent. It's an ongoing trauma. The trauma of the hostages is an ongoing trauma. It's a very small nation. It's a nation that feels much more like a family. And so there is trauma, and yet life does go on. And part of the problem is that the people in this country have learned how to live with a certain level of violence and terror. And yet, what's extraordinary is, and I wonder what will happen this year, you know, every year, year after year, they do a poll internationally. I forget under whose auspices, of the happiest countries in the world. Israel is always in the top 10. Both the Jews and the Arabs here are always in the top 10 of happiness. And you know, happiness is not related to your danger. It's not related to your physical comfort. Happiness is related, I believe, to being a sense of living a life that's connected to what you're supposed to be doing. And I think everyone who lives here recognizes that it's important. The Jews have come back to our homeland, and it's important to exist and forge ahead.
Thank you, Jeff. I appreciate you hopping on today live from Israel, you know, running our office in Israel, the ACLJ Jerusalem. We couldn't be more proud to have that set up there, and hopefully that expands and grows as the support continues from a lot of people here. You know, you'll see the press, and you'll feel like everyone in America is now on one side of this issue. We all know that it's a very divided country, and sadly, this has become one of those topics that felt like it didn't used to be divided, but now you're seeing a coalition of folks that maybe you never thought would in support of Israel, and then, of course, those who are against it. We appreciate you, Jeff, for coming on. I did want to tell you, as we head into the next segment, we are going to hear, Will, in the next segment, from Cece Heil, who is currently supporting Israel at the UN.
And this morning, for us, because it's evening, obviously, in Geneva, she delivered an oral intervention in defense of Israel. So our team has the courage to go to Geneva in the hostile environment that is the United Nations and deliver a message, an oral intervention in defense of Israel. And you're going to hear that. And tomorrow we'll play a defense that she gave in an appeal, really, to the Human Rights Council regarding our client Shahzad, yep, who is in Pakistan. That one hasn't happened yet, our time. So we'll have it hopefully tomorrow. Sure. Everyone.
Stay on hold. If you have questions or comments, give us a call, 1-800-684-3110. Also, if you're just joining us right now on YouTube or Rumble, you saw the headline about the calls for resignation of Pete Buttigieg after that bridge disaster. We'll reset and talk about that as well. We talked about that a little earlier in the broadcast. I know some people are like, you guys are talking about Israel. I clicked on it for this. Well, we led with that. We'll come back to it, so stay tuned. I appreciate all of you joining us. If you're watching on YouTube, I'm going to ask you to hit that thumbs up and subscribe if you haven't already. Makes my social media team happy when I say that. So go ahead and do that and give us a comment. Into the Life and Liberty Drive this week. You've heard me say it already. I just need you to do one simple thing. Go to aclj.org. Give a donation, single donation, or become an ACLJ champion, which is a monthly recurring donor. Do that right now. All donations are doubled. We'll be back in less than a minute.
Keeping you informed and engaged, now more than ever. This is Seculo. And now your host, Logan Seculo.
Welcome back to Seculo. We are talking about, obviously, that tragedy, that bridge collapse that happened. And we make sure, if you're joining us now, that you know that there have been a lot of calls. Look, for the last few months, if not more, there have been a lot of calls due to all the disasters that are currently happening in our transportation sector for Pete Buttigieg to resign. But also, you heard in the last segment from our Jerusalem office, you heard from Jeff Balaban. I also want you to hear worldwide what we're doing here at the ACLJ as we are heading into this Easter week. We do have a, Will, why don't you set up what this is, an oral intervention
right.
at the UN. Maybe just give a brief understanding for people to know what they're about to see.
So it's a UN Human Rights Council. They have a part of their session where NGOs, non-government organizations like the ECLJ, which is an accredited NGO at the United Nations, can go and deliver a message based on whatever the topic that they are addressing is. They normally have an agenda item. So one of the agenda items is Pakistan. And so in that oral intervention, we're bringing up the persecution of our own client in Pakistan. That's one that we'll play for you tomorrow. But Israel, an agenda item, as happens to be often at the UN Human Rights Council, because they love to hate Israel at the UN Human Rights Council, afforded us an opportunity to go there and speak on behalf of defense of Israel. And so this is Cece Heil in Geneva today. Let's take a listen.
I give the floor to European Center for Law and Justice.
On October 7th, 2023, Israel faced one of the worst attacks by Hamas, Palestinian Islamic Jihad, and other terrorist groups from the Gaza Strip. Over 1,200 Israelis were brutally killed, including men, women, children, infants, and the elderly. Women were raped and mutilated. Dead bodies were desecrated. The terrorists bragged about these atrocities. There's no doubt that Hamas's actions constituted crimes against humanity, war crimes, and genocide. Yet the international community is condemning Israel for defending itself and vowing to eliminate the terrorists who deliberately committed such evil acts. We saw that happen here yesterday. Instead of condemning Hamas's war crimes, UN officials have accused Israel of committing genocide, even though Israel takes every precaution to minimize harm to civilians. While many are quick to condemn Israel for civilian casualties, they give a free pass to Hamas, even though Hamas is responsible for those casualties because it uses its own civilians as human shields. This council must unequivocally condemn Hamas for its war crimes against Israel and affirm Israel's inherent right to self-defense. Further, we demand the release of the remaining hostages being held by Hamas in flagrant violation of human rights and the laws of armed conflict. Thank you.
That was senior counsel of the ACLJ at the UN delivering this oral intervention. Really powerful stuff that's happening all around the world, thanks to your support. I mean, really, that's all it is thanks to your support. We wouldn't be able to afford the travel alone. And that cost alone, as you know, as someone who's probably traveled worldwide, you know that that is not something to take lightly. So we have to be able to do these things. We have to be able to work all over the world. We have to have offices in Israel, in Washington, D.C. We have satellite offices around the country and around the world. In Strasbourg, France, the European Union, we are wherever we can be. We have a representation at the UN, whether you like it or like them or not, someone's got to be there for your voice. And we are really blessed to be able to do that. You know, I don't take that lightly at all, that we're able to have such a broad scope of influence on the world. And none of that happens. And I really don't take it for granted, because none of it happens without your support. Because we are fully funded by individual donors. People who have said, I'm dedicating either a one-time donation, hopefully multiple times a year, or a lot of you who've become ACLJ champions, 20,000 of you that have become ACLJ champions, those who have said, I will be a monthly donor to the ACLJ because I know the work they do and the content they create is worthwhile. We couldn't be more thankful. By the grace of God, we're able to do this, and by your support. Go to ACLJ.org. We do have a stretch goal right now. We have tried to hit an additional 500 new ACLJ champions, because thanks to you, we hit our initial goal, which was 20,000 total, and now we are headed towards 2,500, and we are very close. I'll give you a reported number when we get back of how close we are, and there are thousands of you watching right now. You could take us over the top today. Welcome back to Secular. We are joined by Mike Pompeo, setting up the current conversation of what happens if Israel goes into Rafah, major city, and what that means. Of course, the American government and the American press is spinning this as, you know, the end of the world. If that is to happen, does it cause a mass chaos, as if the world isn't already in mass chaos? But I do think before we get commentary from Secretary Pompeo, we should hear what our Vice President Kamala Harris had to say about this, because as you know, there's nothing she loves more than, you know, sometimes it feels like it's buses, school
geography,
buses,
geography,
globes, a lot of physical things. Of course, what does she lead with by 10?
Let me tell you something. I have studied the maps. There's nowhere for those folks to go. And we're looking at about 1.5 million people in Rafah who are there because they were told to go there, most of them. And so we've been very clear that it would be a mistake to move into Rafah with any type of military operation.
A mistake, but would there be consequences if he does move forward?
Well, we're going to take it one step at a time, but we've been very clear in terms of our perspective on whether or not that should happen.
Are you ruling out that there would be consequences from the United States?
I am ruling out nothing.
Ruling out nothing. You know, you should have a lot of confidence when Kamala Harris says that she has studied the maps. She's looked at the maps. But I do want to, in all seriousness, ask you, Secretary Pompeo, it does seem like a full-scale, you know, attack, if you will, or you know, surge in Rafah will happen, feels imminent. Why is this crucial in Israel's path to success?
Logan, in the end, you can't leave 5,000, 6,000, 7,000 Hamas terrorists on your border after what happened on October 7th. That will happen again and again and again. It's basically that easy. When I hear Vice President say there'll be consequences, I don't have any idea what they're talking about. Neither does she, what the consequences will be. What are you going to punish Israel for defending itself and protecting its own sovereignty? I can't imagine that's what they're contemplating. Not only do they have to complete this task against Hamas in the south, and it saddens me that Hamas is using these civilians to protect themselves. But make no mistake about it, we still got problems in the north. There are missiles being launched into Israel in the north. There's still 60 or 80,000 people in the north of Israel that can't return to their homes. We wouldn't let anything like that happen in our country. If there were nations firing into ours, conducting terror attacks inside our country, we cannot demand that the Israelis do that in theirs. And I'm confident that if we do, they're going to properly ignore us because they're going to do the right things for themselves.
Mr. Secretary, what concerns me is that the Biden administration seems to be more bold in their language that they'll use against the Israelis, whether it be Kamala Harris here saying that she's not going to rule out anything, or whether it be the fact that they allowed at the UN Security Council a ceasefire resolution to go through. While Admiral Kirby tried to say we don't support it because it doesn't have the language, the abstention, pulling a play out of the Obama playbook, allowing something that damages Israel to go through while under the watch of the American veto. What are your take on this as they do continue to ratchet up what seems to be pure hostility against the Israelis?
This was absolutely an act of aggression against Israel to allow this to pass through. We had the ability to stop it. It's a ceasefire. It doesn't have any a demand for a ceasefire. It doesn't have any mention of even the fact that Hamas did on terrible attacks on October 7th. And it certainly doesn't talk about getting hostages back home. And so when I hear Kirby say this isn't an escalation, that's just nonsense. And he knows better. The reality is that they are now working on domestic U.S. politics at the expense of the Israeli people, of the rightful Jewish homeland. And, you know, that's dangerous not only for Israel. Who's going to negotiate the release of hostages when, if you're Hamas, why would you negotiate when you have the United States siding with you? There's no leverage for the Israeli leadership. This is dangerous for the Gulf states as well. Iran will see this. And the likelihood that there are more attacks from Iran, more attacks from the Yemenis into the Red Sea, as a direct result of the United States not defending Israel's capacity to defend itself, is pretty apparent. I think the risk is really great.
So the waters they're navigating here are the far left of the party, which are obviously pushing the anti-Israel, pro-Hamas narrative. But even within the president's own party, he's getting backlash for the allowing, by abstaining, the UN resolution to go through, whether it's Senator John Fetterman from Pennsylvania, who has been very outspoken in support of Israel through this entire process, Congressman Josh Gottheimer of New Jersey, and Congressman Tom Souza, all have said that we should have not allowed this to go through. They've condemned the resolution. So politically, as we march towards November, where does this land the president in trying to figure out a policy towards the Middle East?
In my experience, we're laughing. My experience with these issues that are truly important, that are national security issues, is when you begin to play politics, you go down a very dangerous path, because you end up in a terrible place from a national security perspective. And the chance of you actually picking up any votes is near zero. This has never been a partisan issue. Democrats and Republicans alike have supported Israel's right to defend itself for decades, and indeed have provided American support so that they could do so. It's the first time that we've had public statements by a U.S. president siding essentially with the terrorists, all in the aim to try and figure out how to get that last thousand or incremental couple thousand votes in Michigan or Minnesota. That's a bad way to formulate policy, bad policy. And I think it will turn out to be terrible politics as well, because I think many of those folks aren't going to see this as enough, that as you can never do enough for them. And they're not likely to side with President Biden in the election ahead either.
Absolutely. Secretary Pompeo, last question before we let you go. New Gallup poll was released today showing 55% of Americans disapprove of Israel's actions in Gaza. Obviously, we know this is always seems to do with, honestly, the Israel's not the greatest at PR, it seems like. And a lot of times they will lose that PR battle, and we'll see what happens on college campuses. We see what happens on social media and celebrities. But that's up 10% since November. Do you think the Biden administration is being swayed by this? Do you think they're being guided by what they see as this public outcry?
You know, Logan, I actually think they're driving the public outcry. I think the very things we've been talking about today, telling the Israelis that they're overdoing it, having the Secretary of Defense say, hey, you can't go into Rafah without a plan, as if the Israelis would go into Rafah without a plan. I think they are actually fueling that polling data. I think there are those saying, gosh, if the Biden administration is against it, surely this is bad. Here's the good news. While the Israelis may not be winning the PR war, they're going to win the war that really matters, the war that keeps their people safe. And I think in the region, that will be respected. I think that will be respected by the Iranians. And I think Israelis will live better lives and Americans will be more secure as a result of what Israel must do, and I am confident will do.
All right, thank you so much, Secretary Pompeo. We always appreciate you coming on here and being such a big part of this broadcast. We do have some phone lines open right now. Again, thank you so much for your support throughout these years. We do have some phone lines open. As we head into the final segment, I would love to hear from you. 1-800-684-3110. 1-800-684-3110. If you're on hold, stay on hold. I'm going to get to you. But if you do have something to say, we have some lines open. This is a perfect time to do it as we head into this weekend. We're halfway through the week here on Wednesday, but for a lot of you or your kids, maybe they're off Good Friday, maybe they're off on Monday. That is why we're spending an extra amount of time telling you about our Life and Liberty Drive. I don't mean to just come on here and this be sound like we're just a broken record here and repeating ourselves over and over again, but we could not do this work. We could not have people like Secretary Pompeo on our ACLJ team without you. It's just fact. There may be very little facts left in this world, but that is one of them, that we cannot put together this amazing broadcast each and every day. We cannot do this incredible legal work without you, and of course, without the grace of God to help us push forward, even in times in this country where it feels like, the bridges are falling down all over the place, whether that's literal or metaphorical, and we couldn't do that and be there for you. And honestly, also be there for you when you need legal help. Understand that as well. I always push that because I don't think we talk about it enough. If you go to aclj.org/help, and it's within our scope of what we do here at the ACLJ, you are assigned a lawyer immediately and at no cost. No cost to you. Like, that is wild. No one offers that. Go to aclj.org/help if you need legal help right now. But right now, if you want to always make sure we're there. That safety net is there for you, for this country, and for you personally and your family. We need your support. So go to aclj.org, make a donation today. To explain a matching, you know, a matching month, if you will, right now, this Life and Liberty Drive, it also is matched. So all donations, individual donations, are doubled. You can scan the code that's on the screen if you're watching on YouTube or Rumble or on Facebook. Do that real quick. Look, we'll be back with all of your phone calls. Phone lines now have completely jammed. Hopefully, hopefully they're all great. We're able to screen them all. But there may be some that open up, so keep trying at 1-800-684-3110. I also want to individually thank all of you that are watching. Those who listen on radio as well. If you're listening on terrestrial radio, God bless you. I appreciate it. But using outlets like Rumble, using outlets like, honestly, you may not love them, but you may be on there with YouTube and Rumble. We're able to broadcast this show to the entire world at a very little cost. We have to do the cost of production, and that's where you come in. But unlike radio, unlike some of these things that are very high dollar to be a part of them, we are able to broadcast this show absolutely around the world for free to everyone who wants to listen to it. We can't do that without you as well. ACLJ.org. Hey, one line open. So I know that is, you know, someone didn't make it. Someone didn't make it on 1-800-684-3110. Support the work of the ACLJ. Today, Life and Liberty Drive. Become a champion. ACLJ.org. Welcome back to Secula. We are going to take your phone calls. Some of you called about that bridge collapse situation and what that means for American infrastructure. Let's start calls with that. Let's go to Roger, who's calling in Oregon, who's been on hold, by the way, for 32 minutes. Roger, first, I apologize, but also welcome to the broadcast. You're on the air.
Thank you very much. Thanks for taking my call. I'm no mariner, but it really seems quite obvious to me that a captain of this type of vessel should know the height of his ship with cargo, the tide conditions, and the bridge clearance. To me, this should be just a standard approach criteria. So if there's any question about clearance, that captain should not have proceeded into that harbor. I'm not hearing anything on this anywhere from this perspective. Kind of concerns me.
Yeah, Roger, there is some information that was specifically related to that. I know that they had the thought process, this was a power outage. Well,
and that's the NTSB, which is the National Transportation Safety Board, has said that minutes before impact, there was a total blackout of engine and electrical power on the ship. And they also have like a black box recorder on these ships, similar to an aircraft, so that if something happens, there is a record of what's going on.
And there was a mayday
call. So they can
try
to do an investigation. So while I agree with Richard that yes, and I don't necessarily discount that maybe the captain of the ship did know those informations, but when they lost power, with the strength of the tides and everything, they couldn't control where the ship was going.
Yeah.
And that's why it hit that pylon. It wasn't necessarily just clipping the underside of the bridge.
They couldn't
It hit the structural integrity of the bridge, which anchored it to the ground and held it up. And
yeah,
that's
sure
the story
that
they're
bridge,
telling us.
I'm sure if that is true, that right. that bridge has taken these tankers and these shipment procedures over years. You know, it's happened constantly, continually. But yeah, because they lost power, the captain did call a mayday. And they were able to shut down portions of the bridge before it happened. But it was just minutes before it happened. So obviously there was still some loss of life, unfortunately. Let's go to Susan, who's watching on ACLJ.org and is an ACLJ champion out of beautiful state of California. Susan, Sue, you're on the air.
Thank you for taking my call. I listen to a port authority here in Los Angeles, and we have two very large ports. And his concern when he saw the video of that big ship, that there were no tugboats guiding it. And in the Port of California, or in the Southern California area, that would not be allowed. So I was just curious. I did not see any tugboats. They would have been there available to guide it from the very beginning. But what's your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I mean, I'm not too knowledgeable on the tugboat world, but I do have friends
in an area with ports, we weren't necessarily up to speed on the laws of maritime.
But I have been around a lot of these tugboats. Oddly enough, I have friends and family that work in that industry, and I have seen the intricacy of what they do, and it is actually very impressive in a way that I had no idea. Like, I never had thought about it until I went to a christening of a ship just last year. That sounds crazy, but of one of these big ships, and I couldn't even fathom the scope of it until I was there and saw what they're working with. again, should there be more restrictions? Should there not have been other boats around this? But I don't know
and
I don't know that I could speak with any authority.
I am certain that we will have more information that comes out. I don't know within this bridge if that's yet in a port section where they would need a tugboat or a guide, a pilot vessel to join them there. But also you have to remember that this wasn't just, according to what is being released now, this wasn't just a captain not steering it properly and right. accidentally hitting it. This was what they're saying is a total power failure, and therefore there wasn't the ability to control. So even a tugboat, if they weren't being hauled in because of already a loss of power by a tugboat, I don't know that the tugboat would be there other than just as a pilot boat, and therefore if they lost power, it wouldn't have necessarily stopped this tragedy in and of itself.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you for calling, and thank you for being an ACLJ champion. I appreciate it. Let's go to John in Pennsylvania, watching on Facebook. John, welcome.
Gentlemen, how you doing? Great job. Real quick question. I don't know if you guys heard it, but our illustrious president, after this got on TV and made this comment that the federal government would be there to pick up the whole tab to replace the bridge. And I heard that and I said, wait, why would the taxpayer be paying for a bridge that the ship company and its insurance carrier should be responsible for, irregardless of whether, even if it's an accident?
John, I think that your question echoes many in our audience as well as in this country of why does the president find a way to pay for everything? It seems like across the world at this point. However, I will say, you know, maybe the trillions in that infrastructure bill that he already got passed should have already been looking into many of these bridges and trying to secure them. I think probably some of the rationale, and now I know the governor of Maryland declared a state of emergency, and a lot of times that's done to get the federal government to bring in outside dollars for disaster relief. This is clearly a disaster. But a lot of times the federal government will step in on situations like this where it's going to be a major disruption in shipping within the country. So you think that the cargo that was going underneath, but this was a major artery bridge that would have deliveries and things going across it. And if that is then out of the picture, it can cause delays. It can have a supply chain disruption. I have a feeling that's going to be the answer from the federal government of why they need to step in to try to help quickly remedy this instead of leaving it all in the taxpayers of Maryland. Now, him saying we'll pick up the tab, I could certainly see the National Transportation and Safety Board, which would have oversight in a situation like this, be able to go after the insurance company, the shipping company, and the shipping company to recover part of that judgment, possibly. We'll see if that plays out. But in the interim, the federal government's not just going to let a bridge that does contain, and I agree with this to a point, that the federal government does have, whether or not ideologically I agree with that the government's the only one in control of the roads, but you can say, because it is, they do need to step in to make sure that we don't see more Bidenflation when it comes to the supply chain because of this.
All right, let's go to Mark in Ohio watching on YouTube. Probably the last call of the day. Thank you all for calling. Mark, you're up.
Yes, good afternoon. My question is about election law. With Trump having such a good lead in the presidential race right now, it looks like the Democrats are going to have to pull a rabbit out of the hat to be able to have a chance to win the presidential race. Is it possible that President Biden could announce former President Barack Obama as his VP candidate, and then soon after inauguration, we would see Biden step down for health reasons, and we would have our former President Barack Obama as our president again?
No.
I mean, the
because
answer to that,
of the
Mark,
Constitution.
Yeah, the Constitution says it's two terms. He's had two terms as president. So even if for some reason there was some loophole where he could be vice president, if it went up for it,
he wouldn't be able to ascend to the presidency.
Yeah, it would go to the Speaker of the House.
Yeah.
So that wouldn't happen. Also, Mark, truthfully, they're not going with anybody else. So here we got to come to the realization that this is Trump versus Biden. This is Harris versus whoever Trump has decided to be the VP. That's the tickets they're sticking with. We are, unless something medically happened, if there's some sort of medical disaster, which, I mean, can happen with legitimately anyone at any day in any moment, but barring that, deal with the cards that are dealt. And that is what we're dealing with. Whether we like it or not that it's Trump and Biden again, simply, that is what it's going to be. That is going to do it for today's broadcast. Again, support the work of the ACLJ. My last call today for you to become an ACLJ. I'm going to say today, become an ACLJ champion. That is a monthly supporter. Will, did we have a number that we hit that we need to hit that stretch goal?
Yeah, we need. Give me 1 second.
1 second. We've got 25 seconds. You find us that number, Will. I know it's under 150 to hit that stretch goal. So under 150 people. 111. That was a big move in the last few minutes here. 111. There's a lot more of you watching right now just on Rumble and just on YouTube. Become an ACLJ champion. That is a monthly supporter at any level that you feel comfortable with. Of course, you can cancel anytime. ACLJ.org. Talk to you tomorrow.